My mayor's still Muslim. My bagel's still Jewish. Hamilton's on our side. Nixon 5. Welcome back to Motorsport 101. For those who think I just compared Lewis Hamilton to the Pope, you would be correct. I'm sure that'll go down well in certain parts of the world. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 664. Yes, I managed to actually start counting them correctly again. Over here at Motorsport 101, glad you could join us. And, well, we're coming to you fresh off the biggest race in the world. But we'll be talking about that in the next episode of Motorsport 101. We've got to get Barcelona out of the way first. The newly renamed Barcelona Catalunya Grand Prix, because it's not the Spanish Grand Prix anymore. That's in September when we go to the Madryn for the first time.
The Madryn will be finished by then, right? Right.
Well, to be they had a big event there a couple of days ago to christen the thing. So it looks like they're actually going to get it done in time.
I've seen some footage of that on the 26 DLC pack. I hope it isn't finished, honestly.
It's rough. It is a rough looking motherfucker. I do like the fast elements of it. I do like the banking, but the rest, oh boy.
Mm-mm. Well, we're going to deal with that later because we got a Barcelona Grand Prix to talk about. We got a Catalunya Grand Prix to talk about, folks. Lewis Hamilton won in red, and it wasn't a sprint. It was the actual gosh darn Grand Prix.
Indeed. Yeah. Lewis Hamilton is a Ferrari winner in his 31st attempt in red, and all of a sudden, the dynamic of Formula One has just shifted. Narratives have been rewritten. We're talking all sorts of nonsense in regards to this Grand Prix and the general response to it, and we're here to untangle this web of bullshit. So, here, I'm Jay Harrison. There are Joe Collin and Cameron Buckley. You've already heard them already over the course of the show. Glad you could join us, as ever. And we'll break all of that down. What's going on with Lewis Hamilton? What's going on with Charles Leclerc? What's going on from George Russell? And, well, we thought Isaac Hadjar had his first podium for Red Bull off the back of the Monaco Grand Prix. Turns out he didn't. Although, turns out he might also actually get it back again. We'll have to wait and see. We'll break down the nuances of podium gate and how it rumbles on. And more news on that coming through today, actually, as a matter of fact, as we record this on June 17th. All of that and more in the next 50 minutes or so. But in the meantime, here's the places you can find us real quick. We're on youtube.com/motorsport101. We're on facebook.com/motorsport101. We're on Twitter at motorsport_101. No, follow our personal handles. You can see Buckley917 at DreHarrison101 or DreHarrison on Blue Sky. Same for RJ O'Connor. Just put his name in there. RJ O'Connor, you can't miss it. We're on Instagram and TikTok for video highlights of the show as well. Instagram at Motorsport101Pod and TikTok at M101_podcast. You can also check out our website for full written reviews of all of the racing action that we cover on this show. That's at motorsport101.com. And, of course, on that site, you can also find details on our Patreon page if you really fancy backing us financially on there. You can do so right there, patreon.com/motorsport101. $5 gets you early access to all of our content. And you even got a DR off early for free this weekend. Also, wasn't I generous for you? All of that. And you're upgraded to a $10 tier. You can listen to these episodes live as they're being recorded on Riverside as Raptor, Jason, Emma, and Kira are doing so right now. Thank you very much. Hope you guys enjoyed the show, as always. And thank you for the continued support. Don't forget as well, if you feel like backing us for a whole year, you can do so at a 30% discount. We're generous here at M101. That's what we do. That's what we do. Right. Without further ado, let's talk about the 2026 Barcelona Catalunya Grand Prix.
I think it's safe to say that if there are two words to describe this year's Barcelona Catalunya Grand Prix, tactical warfare. George Russell took pole position for the Grand Prix ahead of Lewis Hamilton, with Kimi Antonelli, your championship leader, off the front row for the first time in 10 qualifying sessions this season. Russell held the lead early via his mediums with Lewis Hamilton on softs, but on lap 12, Hamilton darted into the pits for a set of hard tires, and it was the first sign that Hamilton was on a three-stop strategy while the Mercedes were going to commit to two stops. Hamilton stayed in range in front of Russell until a second stop for mediums, where he was 2.5 seconds a lap faster than Mercedes on hards. Hamilton was now in the net lead when the Mercedes came in for their second stops, but when Fernando Alonso's battery died, I breathed easily, knowing that I could forget the rest of this race. And a virtual safety car was called. It was the perfect time for Hamilton's third stop, effectively sealing the win. And of course, we had late drama as Kimi Antonelli passed George Russell for second place with 6 laps left, only for Antonelli's battery to die just a lap later. The winning run is over for Antonelli, as well as Charles Leclerc's power stealer failed on the same lap, but none of that mattered. Lewis Hamilton takes his first Grand Prix win for Ferrari, his first Grand Prix win for nearly 2 years, because as we all know, sprint wins are not the same as Grand Prix wins. And with George Russell in second and Lando Norris in third, we have our first all-British podium since the 1968 United States Grand Prix at Watkins Glen. Where I'll be next week. Would anybody like to guess? Cam, would you like to guess who the three British drivers were on that podium? Take a wild guess.
No, because I'm still at a sleep deficit after watching Le Mans.
The answer, of course, was one of them, Jim. No, Jim had already passed away. They are Jackie Stewart, Graham Hill, and John Surtees, 1, 2, 3. Dan Gurney was 4th, Joe Siffert 5th, Bruce McLaren in 6th. They're obviously not British, but man, how about that? Lewis Hamilton wins for Ferrari. This was always what you expected. This is what we expected when Hamilton made the move. We probably didn't think it would take this long to get win number 106 on the board, but we got there.
You know, there was a good while where I genuinely wasn't sure if we were going to have this day with Lewis ever. I'll get into more of the nitty-gritty as to that later. But you can't take anything away from him. That was a majestic performance. That was the most Lewis Hamilton-esque he has looked in a good 2 or 3 years. Easily. That was the
Lewis.
That was the Lewis of old. That wasn't like this. His last win was at Belgium in 2024, and that was kind of inherited. We all know that Russell's intelligent one-stopper won that race, but of course he was 800 grams under because man was sick as a dog. We just didn't know it at the time. Then, you know, the 2024 British Grand Prix is the real sort of spiritual last Hamilton win with the mixed conditions that came through on that. But it goes to show you, if nothing else, just how much Lewis Hamilton is still a needle mover in this sport, because the whole sport felt different when he won this race. This was an emotional win because Lewis has beat the drum for the last few months about trying to find himself again, about reminding himself who he was. And you know how Hamilton fans love a good emotional squeeze out of their star man. It was the first win for him in a Ferrari. Ferrari's first win in general since Leclerc at Monaco. And I want to say, was that all other signs in Mexico? I want to say
signs in Mexico 24.
Yeah, so a good year and a half since Ferrari's last win, you know. And, like, I've said it many a time on this show, Lewis Hamilton is the sport's only transcendent star. He is the only one who, when he does something prolific, the world beyond Formula One takes a note. And the New York Times sent a push notification that he'd won his first race for Ferrari. Sky did the same. Big Sky did the same, rather than just Sky Sports. He's special when it comes to the context of F1, and it felt special when he won this race. The fact that he was getting dapped up by Kimi, by Max, by George, Lando, Gasly, Perez, he's still a universally respected driver, if nothing else. And everybody knew that, you know, the dry spell of Lewis would eventually end, because it's not just a matter of Lewis believing in himself. Half the grid knows how good, everyone on the grid knows how fucking good he is. Yep. Right? So you know, it was more like a, hey, everybody's a Ferrari fan kind of moment when he crossed the line and won. And that wasn't just a win. That was a dominant win. That was a crushing win. That was a Mercedes got picked up and put in the garbage disposal kind of win.
Look, I know that virtual safety car helped a bit, but sometimes you make your own luck.
And they had done so early in the race by committing to the three stops. So when that VSC came out, Lewis was in a position where he was going to retain track position no matter what. And you gave him a combination of track position and fresh tires.
Yep, it was one of those where they set themselves up to be in that position when the VSC dropped. It really, and you know, it was a slightly longer third stint or fourth stint, really, than what Hamilton probably would have liked. But you only lose 12 seconds under a VSC stop or a yellow flag stop in Catalunya as opposed to 21 in green flag conditions. So it was a no-brainer. Take the extra 9 seconds and come out. And even then, he only just came out in front of George. It was about a second and a half in it on the VSC. So he needed the yellow flag stop. He wasn't there yet. The undercut, people forget. The undercut's extremely powerful in Catalunya, probably worth 2.5-3 seconds on its own. Fresh rubber in track position is typically king in Catalunya. So
200%, man. We've talked for years about how it is so hard to follow other cars at this place.
I mean, that's what Red Bull bet on last year before the talking point became a different thing with Red Bull and Max Verstappen last year. They were trying the extra stop themselves against a car that they had no way around. And they were kind of making it work. Ferrari in 2013 with the fourth stop, you throw back to Michael Schumacher, just run qualifying laps and throw as much rubber at it as you have on hand.
Yeah, it can work if the car is quick enough. And it was that medium stint. That medium stint where Lewis is 2.5 seconds quicker. I think part of that is also the fact that the Mercedes were strong on mediums, but they were poor on their hard tires by comparison. And that
we do actually know why now. This did come out a couple days after the race in Mercedes debrief. They gave George Russell way too much front wing. He asked for a little more front wing. They gave it like a whole extra turn by accident.
Oh, so in other words, they
had way too much front end in the car.
They goosed Russell on setup. Oh, that's brutal.
On that last stop to put him on the hard. So that is why, because he had the measure of Antonelli pretty much all weekend for the first time in a little bit. And then that last stint, he was just terrible.
Yeah, last stint. I mean, it was really the last stint and a half because, George had 4 or 5 seconds on Antonelli. And then out of nowhere, Antonelli just butchers him in the second half of that hard stint. And next thing you know, he's right behind him. And again, as we said, by the end of the race, Antonelli straight up passes him on merit on the run to turn one with 6 laps left. If that holds up, it's the 6th straight Grand Prix in a row that Russell has lost against Antonelli. Mm-hmm. That would be catastrophic for George. Instead, he's gotten a free 18-point swing on his teammate in the championship battle, which is huge for George. It's a great get-out-of-jail-free card in the end.
Said it after Canada. Reliability will swing back around at some point. It doesn't always. It didn't for Norris last year. He had to do it the hard way because Piastri never had that mechanical retirement to match what happened to him at the Dutch Grand Prix. But this is a genuine gap in the Mercedes armor, is that they are having these battery failures. They are having them across all of their cars. McLaren has experienced the brunt of them thus far. And they are not so dominant this year. Look, they only just got their first Grand Prix defeat. And things had to happen against them, and they had to screw up themselves to help that happen. But they got to clean up the reliability. And that's a point of contention in the first year of new power unit regulations. People are going to get it wrong reliability-wise. But Mercedes does need to shore this up, because they've left, over the last 3 weekends, 75 points on the table here or there between Russell leading and having the mechanical failure in, well, that was 18 points. Another chunk in Monaco, another big chunk here.
I'd say easily 45 to 50 points. If you're doing the rough math, if it's a 1-2 in Canada anyway, which it probably would have been, that's 18. Monaco, George was set for maybe fourth place. That's another 12. You know, and again, Antonelli here was on course for second place, third at worst. So 15 points, if you want to call it that, minimum, maybe more, 18 nearer. Do the math, that's 48 points left on the table. They're lucky they've got a very healthy Constructors' Championship lead right now, because no one else is really punishing them week in, week out. Yeah. But it's a lot of points on the table. And as Cam quite rightly says, McLaren's had three DNSs so far this season off of battery failures.
Lando's out of batteries, my dude. Like, the next battery he takes, he's going to get dropped down the grid. And we are not very far into the season.
Only seven Grand Prix into it, man. Like, that's wild. And McLaren's still up there in the top half of the constructor standings, which just goes to show that, like, hey, it's not... It's weird,
we
man.
Are big... We are big have and have nots this year in F1, where it's like the really Mercedes out front. We'll need to see a bigger sample size, but then Ferrari and McLaren and Red Bull, and then everybody else.
Fernando
so far off.
Fernando Alonso for Aston Martin already took the pit line start. Look where that got him, a DNF.
And then there's Aston Martin. I love how Aston put it going into this weekend. Alonso in an interview, it's like, we found out the engine's bad, we found out the gearbox is very bad, we found out the chassis awful. Not even the livery's not even any good. Like, what is good about Aston Martin at this point?
I saw Mike Crack literally tell the media basically a lengthy apology on behalf of the team for how bad they've been so far this season. Look, I've got nothing but respect for Mike Crack. He's a well-respected technical guy.
He's doing what he can.
He's doing the best he can with what he's got. I've got a lot of time for that man. He's always, you know, very forthright, very honest about these things. A sincere, when he was team principal, he was very sincere in his time there. And I had a lot of time for him with the media. I feel bad for that man having to apologize, because it's not his fault that his team are in this position, but it's embarrassing seeing how bad they are right now.
On current evidence, man, like that Perez start penalty is probably going to bail Aston out of being the worst team in the field on points, because they really should be. They got pieced up by Cadillac this weekend. Track that's sort of considered, you know, if you can go well around this track, you probably have a decent car. And Cadillac were smoking them in the turns, let alone the straights.
This is the baseline F1 track. We do a boatload of tests. We used to do a boatload of testing here. It's a good flatline test for what an F1 car, because it's got a little bit of everything. Long straights, high-speed corners, medium-speed corners, low-speed corners. It's got a bit of everything. It tests everything. And essentially, if you're bad here, it's not a good sign going forward. And Cadillac smoked him. Although, before we move on, quick funny side note, Lance Stroll ended up breaking his spell of 42 consecutive beatings by Fernando Alonso in Grand Prix qualifying. The last time Lance Stroll beat Fernando in qualifying was the 2024 British Grand Prix.
Damn. We still man.
And his response when asked about this was, quote, "I don't give a shit." Which,
you know, I think that's pretty valid.
Yeah.
If I have to drive that hunk of shit every week, then I don't think I care very much.
Yeah, to clarify, it's not quite the worst across the board, because he did out-qualify Fernando in the Chinese Grand Prix sprint weekend last year, but that was the last time across the board the Lance out-qualified Fernando Alonso, which is just, well, it's kind of embarrassing.
It's kind of emblematic of everything Aston is right now. They're the worst team in F1, and it ain't particularly close, and it isn't just on one party either. Fellas,
yeah,
the hell's happened to Charles Leclerc?
I don't get it, man. Because, like, I like me some Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc like was generally he was generally excellent last season. Like, no question reasserted why he is the long term, the present and the future of Ferrari, right? Handles Lewis Hamilton when their first year matching up together, goes into this season, gets a brand new contract extension. He then goes and proceeds and has one of his worst weekends of the season. Crashes out in Q3 for the Grand Prix, so he could start no better than 10th at a place where starting anywhere lower than the front row is typically a death sentence. Would a salvage sits out of it not for a power steering failure? I mean,
it's not just this weekend, though, is it? Because he ruined his own weekend at the very end of Miami. He had a very poor Canadian Grand Prix. He'd be the first person to tell you he had a very poor Canadian Grand Prix just across the weekend. And then he crashed in Monaco qualifying just enough to ruin a shot at pole. And then crashed in Q3 here.
All the while.
Because I'm not going to put the Monaco race crash on him, because by all accounts, that does appear to have been a brake failure.
Yeah. And during all of this, Lewis Hamilton's back to his best form. It's like we flipped the script on the Ferrari dynamic. If not all this year, but certainly been the last three rounds.
Yeah, I was going to say, until Miami, they were pretty even Steven so far head-to-head this year. It's amazing what three weekends can do to a motherfucker, because the funny thing is that I don't like Hamilton had been a lot better so far to start this season, but people actually weren't talking about that very much, which is weird because when Hamilton's normally in good form, people get very vocal about it. It's actually been quite quiet in that Hamilton's closed the gap to Leclerc so far this season. And then, of course, this free race weekend narrative flip happens where Hamilton goes second, first in Canada, Monaco, and then winning here in Catalonia, while Leclerc goes rough fourth place, DNF, and technically speaking, the two DNFs were not his fault, but did make a Q3 qualifier and error, lost the front, went into the wall at turn four. Monaco crashed at the end of qualifying. There was a run of three competitive sessions with crashes there for Charles. Now, I'm personally of the opinion that Charles, I think, gets misnicknamed a little bit, or shall I say misjudged a little bit as a driver in Formula One. He's always been a crasher. And as much as, and I know that's going to sound bad, because it is. In an ideal world, you don't want to crash a race car at all. But I think that's the problem with Charles, is that if you're a fan, if you're an uneducated fan or up to a casual fan, you remember the crashes more. And I think that's part of the problem. They're easier to dig up and find on YouTube or social media or whatever it is. You don't talk about the subtleties of Leclerc as to what makes him so great, i.e. the head-to-heads, where he smashed almost every single head-to-head he's ever had in Formula One. And this is against world-class opposition, Sebastian Vettel, Carlos Sainz, Lewis Hamilton in year one. You know, in an ideal world, he doesn't crash these race cars, but I refuse to get into this new narrative. Because I had people calling him La Washed in my Twitter mentions over the course of this weekend. And I'm just like, what the fuck are we doing here? Charles Leclerc is a spectacular driver. Like, there's one dude in the world, in my opinion, I can say adamantly is better than him. And it's not Lewis. It's the man in the blue Red Bull. You know, that's about it, in my opinion. Like, he's right in that elite group of him, Lando, George, and Lewis. That second group. Take your pick out of the four of them. Maybe throw Piastri in there if you're feeling generous, because he could be anybody on a good day. You know, it's, for me, this whole, I need to see a bigger sample size where people want to start justifying saying Leclerc is washed or that Hamilton's the number one driver now. Like, people need to calm down on this shit.
I think both of those notions are nonsense, but Charles really needs to stop crashing cars. And here's my thing. We're in year 9 of Charles Leclerc, which hurts me. Every ounce of cartilage in my body just shuddered.
He turns 29 in October.
That doesn't sound real. But it does. Is this just what he is? Like, an utterly spectacular driver who will also write off 4 to 5 cars a year?
That's John O'Lacy. That's John O'Lacy.
That's my concern.
John O'Lacy is one of the ultimate streets won't forget drivers. And this is a strange thing to say about a guy who had a F1 career that spanned parts of 13 seasons.
And the thing with John O'Lacy, he would kill for some of the bad Ferraris that Charles has gotten. But it's this thing where, it's going to show up more when you're up against the likes of Max, of George, who George had a streak of this himself. George was wrecking cars kind of left and right in 23 and 24 for a bit. And then he got it out of his system. Max crashed pretty much every race in 2018 until he got it out of his system. And I really like Charles Leclerc, but he's beginning to frustrate me.
Oh. 2-1 England. Woo! Anyway, it's frustrating. But what I would say is that part of the problem is that Charles drives for the prodigal son. Cam is absolutely right. George Russell had a rough streak in there at one point where he did make a lot of high-profile mistakes. You know, he's won. Max Verstappen. The Verstappen we know and love only really became a thing from year 7 of his career.
Yeah, I would argue 2020? Max... Yeah, I would say 2019 to 2020 is when Max got that all the way out of his system, where you don't see Max generally make the weekend ruining error often. He'll have one or two on the year.
Sure.
But with Charles, it's been 3 and 4 weekends, and he had a couple last year, and we know last year's Ferrari was a pig.
Yeah.
He had a couple in 24, but it's he has them often enough for you to go, I don't know about this guy. And then he goes a while without doing it. And you think he's got out of system. But in year 9, it's not cute anymore.
Right.
It's not cute anymore. But let's be frank. The only reason why this is coming up more often is because Lewis Hamilton's in the other side of the garage.
Exactly. This is a Lewis Hamilton.
He exaggerates these issues too often. Yeah, this is a Hamilton in form where people are now writing articles.
I think those two notions are laughable, but I'm getting tired of Leclerc leaving that door open to that kind of discussion. Because the same discussion happened with Carlos Sainz 2 years in a row, and Carlos Sainz was not better than Charles at Ferrari. But they would go on stretches where you would question it.
The thing is, right, is that I don't think Carlos Sainz came into Ferrari with the reputation of being a Leclerc killer.
Not at all. That was why did you sign that guy kind of higher, and then through 21 and 22 kind of proved why they did.
Yeah. Yeah, it ended up working out in the long run that a worse Sainz was just a more than capable, very good number two at Ferrari, or who on a good day.
Nico Hülkenberg just about ended that man's career head to head.
Yeah. And again, as RJ points out, part of this is the fact that, let's be frank, John Elkann spent $50 million a year on Lewis Hamilton. You don't hire Lewis Hamilton to be somebody's number two driver. You hire him to win you a championship.
Simultaneously, it just gave Charles Leclerc an extension that will take him through 2031. So nobody's out here asking them to tear up that extension and just...
No one's smart.
Right. Right. But nobody's smart.
And let's be frank here. Who pushed for the brake change? It was Lewis, allegedly. Right. Lewis was the one who pushed for the brake change for them to switch off their 50-year partner of Brembo's to go to Carbone Industries to switch brakes. It's the whole Hamilton's now becoming the team leader over here at Ferrari, and we're now going to see him try to win a championship his way. and that's going to get people talking.
I think we are way, way too far off before we entertain any idea of Lewis Hamilton winning number eight with Ferrari. Like, this win is
Do you know what this Mercedes is going to do to Ferrari when we go to Powertracks?
We got one coming up next in Austria.
Exactly.
Good luck to you.
Dog, exactly. Like, this is a very cool win. We don't know how many more of these we're going to get because Lewis Hamilton has won three Grand Prix in the last four seasons and change. Since 2022, he has three Grand Prix wins, right? He is 41 years old. Passage of time, like diarrhea, is undefeated, man. We don't know how many of these he's going to get. Someone with a longer career. Someone with a longer career in radio coined that before me, man. Don't put that out
there.
Yeah.
Call a spade a spade. The ground effect era was a write-off for Lewis. Uh-huh. It just did not work out. Three of the 4 years there, he was beaten by a teammate.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it's the only real black mark in the GOAT's resume that he was. He had a 3 of 4 year stretch where he became a part-time winner and was beaten by George and Charles. This is the flipper. He's now won a Grand Prix, and now people want to pencil him in for a world title. And I think people need to calm the shit down over all of this. Yes, I would.
You need a way, way bigger sample size before we consider Ferrari on that level. And while Lewis has had a few good weekends in a row, and not taking anything away with that, you'd expect Charles, for his own sake, to bounce back on that.
Yeah,
he will, and he always has. You know, like he's had rough patches in his career before. He's always bounced back, and like I said, he has one losing season in his 9 year career. And on the head to heads, he smoked Carlos Sainz in 2021. It was the fact that Carlos scored all his points on weekends where Leclerc DNF'd. That's the reason why he won that season by 5.5 points over him. I think it was 52 points Carlos Sainz scored on weekends where Charles only scored one, and that was where all of Sainz's podiums were that year. It was the definition of the points inflating the matchup. Charles got better. Charles is a brilliant fucking driver. Yes, I'd like to see him crash a little bit less, but I still put way more of his struggles in his career down to Ferrari's general malaise as a manufacturer than him as a lead driver himself. He is not the grand issue in this team. But, and what sucks about for me most is that if Ferrari do pull off a miracle, Hamilton's going to get all the fucking credit for it, which is not fair either, quite frankly. But, you know, has discussing Hamilton on the internet ever been a fair fight?
Nope. Not really.
Remember, the 2024 Mercedes was built with his input exclusively. They got annihilated.
I would like, if this run of form from Hamilton ends up being the firecracker up Charles Leclerc's ass that gets him back in a form, like, great. Because I selfishly, as a Charles Leclerc fan, as a Charles Leclerc investor from the time he was in European Formula 3, because I am still getting over the death of his mentor, Jules Bianchi, I would like to see him win a championship in red. And I hope that time is not quickly running out.
It's wild that we're even saying that Charles Leclerc is 30 next year. That's one of those does not compute sort of facts that comes through the headspace. The man is, people forget, he was born 2 weeks after Max Verstappen was. Yeah. And Max just debuted 2 years earlier.
That's the weird thing about Max. He's barely any older, and yet he's been racing for far longer in the top class.
This is year 11 for Max this year compared to year 9 of Charles. Wow. Maybe 2 years earlier.
What's been going? I also have this in the notes. What's going on with George Russell? Well, he got second place, but once again, right at the very end, you know, we talked about his pace falling off a cliff late in the race.
Well, Cam spoiled it for me in the sense I did not know that Mercedes had botched his strategy, but he took a lot of flack after this race.
Croatia scored again.
Great.
Oh my god. Yeah. George was getting raked over the coals on the socials for once again just not being the imperious George Russell that we saw for much of last year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But we now know they gave him too much front wing on the final stop because he had the measure of Kimi all weekend for the first time in months. It's that titanium dioxide. It's catching up to Kimi that he can't consume it.
Yeah, and I'm struggling.
And that just... any shot that Mercedes might have had to come back at Lewis, which they probably weren't going to do anyway, it ended right there because not only did that happen, and then that caused him to destroy his rear tires in the second half of the stint because, well, he's got an oversteery car. Those two fought tooth and nail for a little bit, and they kind of didn't commit to the two-stop as hard as they could or should have, nor did they split the strategies, which is the ideal solution, but that would have disadvantaged one of their cars. And as we know from McLaren last year, we can't disadvantage one driver. We got to disadvantage both.
Right, but that's McLaren's issue. That's not Mercedes.
But the problem is that Toto admitted after the race that his indecision may have cost them the win here because there was a window when Hamilton was bearing down of them. They could have told one car to come in and switch to a free stopper to cover off Hamilton's undercut attempt. But they didn't. They stuck it out. They had Antonetti come in towards George. I think part of the problem here, and I don't think it will be talked about an awful lot, is Lando Norris, who had a really, really good drive to get third place in the end. I don't think people are going to talk about it very much. Lando was excellent this weekend. A real, really good drive. Because he was only a couple of seconds down the road, it would have meant having to pass Lando on track because they don't know what strategy he was running. So if anything, Hamilton kind of bullied Mercedes into basically having to lock in their two-stopper because the three-stopper would have meant having to pass Lando on track, and that would have been no easy task either. So overall, like, they were handcuffed. So I don't hate the Mercedes call to not switch strategies. I get why they didn't. There was reasonable grounds for them not to do it, but when you're 2.5 seconds quicker than you're behind the guy that you're trying to chase, there's not an awful lot you can do about that in the first place, really. It's like, that's overwhelming pace. That's pace that no strategy is going to be able to overcome, no matter how you slice it. It was just compound difference and a combination of that and a mistake in the Mercedes pit crew. Mercedes, once again, having an operational issue when they've got two guys in the fight. They've done this a lot over the years.
It's been like 10 years since we got to see those kinds of problems with the Silver Arrows.
Now, let's rewind back to the Monaco Grand Prix, where Isaac Hadjer had scored his first podium for Big Boy Red Bull Racing after the Pierre Gasly pit lane speeding penalty. But, Dre, there's been an update. There's been an update this past week.
Okay, let me get you up to speed here a little bit. So, as we know, Pierre Gasly crossed the Monaco Grand Prix finish line in third place on the track.
Yep.
He was given a 10 seconds worth of time penalties because he had two speed in the pit lane offenses in that race that he had not served yet. Those were added on. He drops to seventh place. Alpine were the only team on the grid that lodged a right to review into said penalty decision. They were granted that right of review because Alpine were fundamentally able to prove via telemetry that Gasly never went above 60 kilometers an hour. 58.4 and 58.5, I believe it was, on their two runs through the pits, respectively. The right of review was accepted. The evidence was seen. The stewards reversed their decisions on both penalties. Gasly gets his 10 seconds back. He's back up to third again. So Gasly gets his podium reinstated. Happy days at Alpine. Congratulations, you get a podium finish. Everybody loves it. Nine more points for Alpine. Actually, Racing Bulls ended up losing 4 and McLaren 2 as a result of that switcheroo. Right? Wrong. It turns out McLaren and Red Bull, and now Mercedes, we found out today as well, have all lodged an appeal against that reinstatement. I believe the words McLaren used was trying to reestablish sporting integrity, I believe was the phrase they used. on this as a way of trying to get that a penalty reversed. This is where we're at now. I believe the right to review hearing is going to be on Saturday during the Austrian Grand Prix weekend on Saturday morning. So we'll know then if there's any outcome towards that. As said earlier, these guys now have to submit new and significant evidence to cite overturning that penalty.
Right, because the classification right now is final, subject only to any appeals like this. And as you said, Dre, these appeals have to come with brand new evidence. I mean, George Russell already served a related penalty during the race and couldn't have that penalty removed in retrospect.
Mm. So even the funny thing is that I remember Zach Brown during the Monaco Grand Prix saying that Piastri had genuinely gone over the limit. So it wasn't like this was, because what we didn't know at the time and we found out via Alpine's right to review was Formula One management had measured the pit lane incorrectly.
Ooh!
For those who don't know, pit lane speed is worked out as an average. And as an average, it's worked out by putting timing loops in the pit lane, and as the transponders pass through them, the time taken between them works out your average speed. Very similar to how UK motorways work for average speed cameras. Turns out when the FOM put them in for this weekend, they had to put extra space in to accommodate Cadillac, because we now have 11 teams on the grid rather than 10. Turns out when they put the timing loops in, they were measured as 77 centimeters short as to what the measurement was supposed to be. So even if you were passing through these gates at under 60 kilometers an hour, because of the shortened distance and the less time taken, that can raise your average speed, even if you haven't technically gone over.
And Gasly's and the official timekeeper calculations gave Gasly two speeds of less than 60 kilometers per hour by a not insignificant distance.
This is the dumbest fucking sport on the planet. My God.
We have telemetry on these cars.
Just measure speed live. Oh my God.
This is just... And the thing is, right, even Toto admitted to the media during this Barcelona weekend, he expects this right of review to fail. He has more than acknowledged that... What's the best way of me wording this? He's opening a can of worms if this gets accepted, because George Russell had a 5-second time penalty because he sped in the pit lane earlier on, and then we had the drama of the fact he didn't serve said penalty correctly because he thought sitting outside for a double stack was the equivalent of waiting in your box for 5 seconds. It was not. Mercedes were dumbasses about this. So, of course, George had a drive-through penalty, which he had to serve during that final 8-lap restart, which dropped him out of the points entirely. Toto's arguing, hey, if we put 20 seconds back on George Russell's time, it would probably put him like P4 or P5. But as the stewards rightly pointed out in their right to review, we do not have the power to overturn a penalty that's already been served.
Yes, because it's not time, it is actual coming down the pit lane and being dropped down the grid, which then introduces other variables. The problem is that this drive-through was the product of a penalty that was ultimately bogus. If I were the pinnacle of motorsport, I would simply measure a fucking pit lane correctly.
That's right. Why are so many lesser championships, so-called lesser championships, better at doing this than Formula One? Why does Formula One just have an allergy to common sense?
That's what makes it Formula One.
Because the inmates run the asylum, and that's part of the problem. And I've said this for years and years and years, and this is no different. Like, we've now got a quarter of the grid appealing a penalty reinstatement that they know is probably going to fail, just so it makes them feel better about Isaac Hadjar losing a podium to Pierre Gasly. Because from the very start, and I pointed this out last week during our Monaco review, Gasly was the only man whose penalty could be reversed because he didn't serve it during the actual race. And they knew this. They all know this. They're not that stupid. But they're doing this out of ego and to make themselves feel better about it. That's what this is. Because there's no way you can reverse any other of these penalties.
The penalties are fucking bogus. I get both sides of this equation. It is all dumb.
Man, you thought the fallout of Southampton Spygate was crazy.
Oh, God almighty. Fuck me sideways. Look.
Remember, Abu Dhabi 2021 is not the only edition of awful stewarding in motorsports.
Hardly. There's a beehive that exists.
I'm a NASCAR fan.
There's a beehive in my garden that I've joked about for years for good reason. This was not a one-off incident. This is the definition of wacky sporting loopholes that are coming into play. And this loophole will inevitably get closed, but that's the whole point of top-level motorsport. The whole point is you exploit the rule book, you find loopholes, and then those loopholes get closed afterwards. That's how it goes. That's how it's always been. This is no different. This is just political sword fighting with their dicks.
Dre, why would Michael Massey do this?
It's almost like Michael Massey was a symptom of a much larger problem.
Kira makes a point here. Kira, in addition to being a supporter of the show, also a big enthusiast of motorsports court cases. She points out there's a decent chance this could go to CAS. You know, the Court of Arbitration sport. Chance. There's a way to do it because the FIA admitted they were wrong.
Yep.
Because the thing is, right, do you know what the fairest way to do this would be if it went to CAS? You wipe the race off the board. No one scores anything from the Monaco Grand Prix, and the whole race is declared none of it. It's what the Hamilton fans were begging for after Abu Dhabi 2021. They would just void the race.
Yes, until they realized that voiding the race would, in effect, hand Max the title on countback. How quick that narrative ended.
The Aston Martin fans just like, no, our only point! Our only point in this terrible season!
And the thing is, right, people will go absolutely apeshit if Monaco gets voided, because the first response will be, well, why couldn't we have done that 5 years ago? Because I had the exact same shit over an obscure rule in the book when I was talking about the Gasly situation after Monaco, saying, hey, guys, there's a rule that says the stewards can change their mind if there's new evidence. And I'm like, but there's no new evidence.
But again, the aggrieved party from Abu Dhabi 2021 would not get a changed outcome because voiding the race would keep the title in Max's hands.
And if you're Toto Wolff, do you want to take 25 points off Toto Wolff now off of Kimi Antonelli, now knowing what you know?
Given he just had a retirement at the next race, not really, no.
I wouldn't take that risk. No. And Formula One just loves mess. And while we're on the subject of mess, Dre.
Oh, God.
Nico Hülkenberg. How did he retire from this race? Okay, I know things have been pretty lackluster for Alpine. I know things have been pretty lackluster for Audi since that ninth place to start the season in Australia. It's looking more like what people's worst case scenarios were looking like for Audi when they joined the sport full fledged in 2026. But
really annoying thing.
Explain to me this one.
The only thing is, this car has actually been pretty good every weekend.
It has, and that's what makes this doubly frustrating. Now, for those who didn't see this race, this is the freakiest retirement I think I can ever remember in Formula One history. So here's the situation. Liam Lawson and Nico Hülkenberg are fighting on track for 10th place, the last points-paying position on track. Lawson is ahead of Hülkenberg at this point in time. Lawson, who's within about 0.6 in front of Hülkenberg, kicks up some gravel on the exit of turn 12, coming towards the back of the grandstand section towards the end of the lap. Seems pretty normal so far. The gravel inevitably sprays the front of Hülkenberg's car, because that's the direction it's been kicked up in. A piece of gravel goes under the engine cover and hits Hülkenberg's ERS kill switch.
No, didn't. It's underneath the roll hoop where there's basically a pull tab to kill the car.
Yeah.
Hooked it, car dead, race over.
Ooh,
yeah.
I mean,
there's a reason that handle exists. It exists in case the marshals need to shut down the car for safety reasons. There's a manual lever they can hit from the outside to kill the car off, just in case.
Carbon fiber does conduct electricity, and we are in hybrids.
Yes, so there's a kill switch there for safety reasons, just in case. It's right next to the button where you would normally disengage the clutch from the outside manually. It's why you may have seen that McLaren were fined, I want to say, $20,000 last week, because they aerodynamically taped over the clutch disengagement button. Assholes. That is such a shitty thing to do. But yeah, $30,000, $10,000 if it was meant, so $20,000 net, basically. But yeah, you're meant to be able to have these buttons accessible to the outside of the car in case a marshal needs to move it for safety reasons. So of course, a piece of gravel goes under the roll hoop, hits Hulkenberg's ERS kill switch, shuts the car down right there, and then Hulk's able to limp it back into pit lane. But obviously, because it's a kill switch, they can't get it going again. End of Hulkenberg's race, when he probably would have scored a point.
Audi have not scored since the opening weekend, and they have tried every which way to score, and they just can't.
Yeah, they're definitively better than Aston Martin and Cadillac are at this stage. No question about
it. They're definitively like the top car in the midfield. They just keep retiring from Grand Prix.
Yeah, where's the points to show for any of this right now is the problem.
Ridiculous.
This is a one in a million shot. You will never see this happen again. What are the odds that a piece of gravel...
I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again.
Don't you ever mention that comment on me ever again unless you want me to fucking headlock you. No, that is a genuine one in a million shot. What are the odds that someone who's 300 meters in front of you kicks up a piece of gravel and it hits you square in the roll hoop enough where it hits an ERS kill switch from distance when you're moving at over 100 miles an hour? That will never happen again.
That's better aim than most action movie villain henchmen have. When you give them any sort of firearm, they just cannot hit the broadside of a barn.
Call of Duty World of War fans, you'll know this one. What's just happened is they've just assassinated General Hulkenberg with a pistol from across the way.
That's that Turkish sniper dude showing up in blue jeans and a t-shirt.
I'm a natural shooter.
Yep. Natural shooter right in the kill switch. Liam Lawson himself, after the race, he couldn't believe what had happened when he was told, yeah, you fit some gravel up and it hit him in the kill switch. He was like, what, you serious? I was like, I'm so sorry. He said, listen, I would have loved to have been able to do that deliberately if I could, but I'm just really, he felt really bad for him because it was just one of those just real freak accidents. That's
not going to see much more of a freak retirement in a motor race, period.
That's no, throwing tomahawks and old Call of Duty and actually hitting someone.
All right, watermelon, it's fucking personal.
Unbelievable story to end a crazy episode. Formula One is back next weekend for the Austrian Grand Prix from the Red Bull Ring. A power track. Well, now that one's gonna end up for Ferrari. You might want to put the comeback on ice for a couple of weeks. Just putting that one out there.
No. Just strategize around when the Astons are gonna blow the fuck up.
It's a good strategy, quite frankly. So that it will be in a couple of weeks' time from Austria. Our next episode will be the Le Mans 24 Hours review. While these guys will cook, and I will sit back and admire the smell of barbecue from a distance. Because Toyota can finally avenge some demons. That'll be next time on Motorsport 101. I've been Dre Harrison, they've been RJ O'Connell, and he's been Cameron Buckley. Thank you very much for watching and listening, and we'll catch you guys next time. Sayonara.
Later, y'all.
I really need more screens so I can watch more racing at once.
I wonder what Kim Kardashian sent in that face call to have Libby start crying again.